The views expressed in this program are not necessarily the views of the X-Star Radio Network, its staff and management, or Xavier University.
I'm Cynthia Keller, filling in for Ann Thompson. Our guest is Cincinnati author Cynthia Crane, whose book Divided Lives, The Untold Story of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany, is now out in paperback. Cynthia, it was actually your family story that led you to this, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, correct. The beginning of the book is really a memoir about my grandparents and my father. I was led to these women through their story, or more precisely, my grandmother's story. They were in Nazi Germany and escaped in 38 and 39. My grandparents were in what was considered a mixed marriage. My grandfather came from a Jewish background, and my grandmother came from an Aryan, you know, the blonde, the blue-eyed background. So they were considered in a mixed marriage. And the products of those marriages were the Mischling or the half-breeds. And those are the people that I spoke to and interviewed for my book.
What's a Mischling?
Well, it's a product of the Jewish-Christian marriage. And it's how Hitler designated that mixture. And they were in a precarious situation because they were already considered Christian, but because they had that Jewish bloodline, they were then designated as Jews, or at least half Jews or quarter Jews.
So the Nazis actually calculated it very closely according to how much of your blood was Jewish.
Exactly.
And what was their attitude toward these people?
Well, they were really treated as Jews. I mean, they fell under all of the anti-Jewish legislation. They were subject to any of the rules that the Jews fell under. Most of them weren't deported, however, till toward the end of the war because Hitler did not know what to do with this group of people. He didn't want to anger the Aryan side, the German side of that family. You know, still the policy had not been written yet for exactly what to do with them, but they had come up with ideas of sterilization, of course, murder, killing them in the camps, and also even sending the spouse, the Aryan spouse with the Jewish spouse to the camp. Now, that's actually in the marriage, okay, the mixed marriage. Now, the products, the Mischling, there still was no policy for them.
They were considered sort of half-human or
right.
quarter-human or whatever. Your father was 10 years old when he came here, and his surname at that time was Cohn, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't realize, though, that you had any Jewish background. Is that right?
Right. Correct. And actually, according to Jewish law, I mean, I wouldn't really have any because it came from my grandfather's side, and they had all converted. So his family back in the 1700s had already left. Had left the synagogue. Could not even find records of the family practicing. So the assimilation in Germany was very high. And so the family had already, converted, was already Lutheran. So my father was raised Lutheran, so there was no reason, for him to know anything about the Jewish faith, and he never did, and he doesn't today. He's Christian.
And there was nothing in his upbringing or in the culture that reflects a Jewish culture at all.
Now, I would say that culturally, my grandfather was probably still connected in some ways. He was a very well-known doctor, and my great-grandfather was a senator of Hamburg and ran a very big shipping company. So in itself, their history in itself is very fascinating. And I think they were connected, in that way. But as far as religion or having any idea of what the religion was about, they didn't know anything. So he wasn't raised with any of it, and neither was I.
How did you discover it then?
Well, I was talking to my grandmother, who just passed away at 100 a week ago, at age 100. And she started telling me stories when I got older. And that's really how I started to find out what had happened to them in Nazi Germany, because my father didn't talk about it when I was growing up. He really just didn't want to discuss it. And in part because he had such a rough time. He was beaten up by children in school. Actually, the teacher beat him up every day. So there were a lot of scars for him. And he felt like, I'm in the United States now. This is where I want to be. And I don't have anything more to do with Germany. And actually, my grandparents felt the same. But my grandmother started telling me stories, so I found out more and more about what they had been through. And then she told me she wrote a memoir, and I asked her if I could have the memoir, and she hesitated a bit, but she did get it out of the basement, and I read it, and it was very, very good. I mean, I had no idea what it would be about. And I was studying in graduate school primarily women's autobiography. So, of course, I had a real interest just because it was a woman's voice and a very strong woman's voice telling the story of really World War I and her life in Austria and then in Germany and how they got out and how they got to the United States.
Had you never wondered about your last name?
Yeah, I did write about that in the book. And it's really about identity. You know, If you start reading the book, you notice that there's this pattern of identity and what happens to you when you have an identity that you don't really want or you don't know about. And I did feel like something was missing. So I went and investigated, you know, through my grandmother and then by going back to Germany to find out what some of those missing pieces were.
Our guest on Liveline today is author Cynthia Crane of Cincinnati. This is WVXU and the X-Star Radio Network.
Now, the next Fresh Air actress, Hope Davis. She starred in About Schmidt and Next Stop Wonderland. She's starring in two new films, The Secret Lives of Dentists and American Splendor. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Terry Gross and Fresh Air, weekday afternoons at 4 on WVXU and the X-Star Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Julia Sperding, and I have some healthy headlines on Monday. First, tell me where it hurts, and I'll tell you what to do. Well, I won't. A physical therapist from Spectrum Rehab will. Also, teasing. It can be painful for children. We'll talk about the best thing parents can do with psychologist Dr. Serbu. And don't miss my 80-year-old marathon runner who cured himself of cancer 20 years ago. Join me Monday beginning at noon.
We're back on the air with Cynthia Crane. Before the break, we were talking about what happened after you found your grandmother's memoir. Did you then go to your father and ask him about his experience?
Oh, sure. I mean, I don't think it happened all, you know, that literally. I think it was sort of all, you know, all these things started to fall together. It's hard for me to pinpoint a time, but yeah, my father then did tell me more about what had happened to him. He also explained changing his name, and I recall, I didn't know that until I was teenager, and I knew my grandmother's name was different than my father's, but I didn't really probe, and when I did, I just got non-answers, and so he explained that to me, that he came to the United States, and then as he got older, he was in his early 20s, he was still experiencing anti-Semitism because of his name, and he just had enough. You know, it was, if it's not one country, it's in another. And so he decided to just change the name to a monosyllabic name that was similar. And they just sort of picked it out of the phone book, as I recall the story, that he and my mom sat down and just decided to change the name so that their children wouldn't go through some of the things that he went through. I think he really believed history repeats itself, and as we've seen, it certainly does, unfortunately. And he didn't want us to have to go through that when, again, there's nothing against the faith, the Jewish religion. It's just that he wasn't practicing and it wasn't his faith. And it was, his name was constantly signifying that he was indeed from that faith. And he just wanted to remove himself from that.
Did he talk at all about the kinds of anti-Semitism he came across in the United States?
Sure. I can give a few examples. I mentioned quite a number of them in the book. When he was working on the West Coast, they actually wouldn't send him into the Midwest because they said that no one would buy from, he was a salesman at the time, no one would buy from someone with a Jewish name. And, you know, he just repeatedly, this happened to him repeatedly, and it started to interfere with him being promoted even. That was just one small example. But in high school, he was told that he could just apply to University of Michigan because they took Jewish, you know, students. And even though on his records and in his records at the school, it stated clearly that he was baptized in Lutheran and that he'd been Lutheran all of his life. So people, they just disregarded what the facts were. But again, this brings up issues, a whole nother issue about our names and what they signify and maybe the stigmas that are carried with them, how psychologically bound we are to our names. I don't think it's just about Nazi Germany, but it's about these issues that a lot of people face today when they're in mixed marriages or when they're trying to decide what religion they are and, you know, what's my identity and how is my family name tied into all this.
It also reflects, I think, a notion that comes from the Nazis and maybe others that Jews are not a religion but a race, and that therefore you can't convert from a race.
Of course, I disagree with. I think that's a Hitlerian notion,
that's exactly
right?
What I'm saying, yeah.
Right, that it's a race. I would say, and from all of my experience now and all of my research, many Jewish people would say it's a culture, an ethnic group. Certainly, but a race, no. And is it always tied to religion? Not necessarily, like when you asked me earlier about the cultural aspects. I think there are some that people keep, but they don't necessarily go to a synagogue. I think also in the Jewish religion today, a lot of this is going on. There's a high level of there's a high level of intermarriages, and people are struggling with that.
Do you have any idea how common intermarriage was in Germany before Hitler came to power?
It was very common, especially in the north where I was for the most part. In northern Germany, it was very high. It was so common that, you know, most people did not worry that they would be in any kind of danger. I figured they'd be, protected, or that they would be overlooked. My grandfather's a good example because he said, "Well, what's going to happen to me?" You know, people would say, "Change your name or do something," and he's like, "Well, I was in World War One. I have an Iron Cross. I fought in the trenches in France." He was in these evacuation hospitals. He just couldn't conceive that there would be any problem because he'd been living in Germany for a long time without any problems.
For generations, really.
Right. And so, he loved his country. He did not want to leave. And so it was very, very difficult for him when he left. But at that point, he was helping people escape the country, misdiagnosing patients, taking them over to the Baltic and getting them out. So the Gestapo was on to him. He had to get out of the country. And, of course, that was immediate then. His life was in danger, and he was tipped off about that.
So he came first, and then your grandmother and father followed?
Right. Well, my grandmother followed a year later. It took her a long time to get out with her four children, as you can imagine. They kept changing the rules. She'd get 12 documents together, and they changed the next day. So it was a very frustrating time. And this, I think, is a tribute. The Divided Lives is a tribute to her and her strength and to a lot of women's strength. And that's clearly in the book.
I was wondering why you interviewed only women, and did you not find any men?
That's a good question. No, I think it goes back to what I was doing in school. In graduate school, I was studying women's writing and women's narratives. And, you know, men usually get to tell their story. They had more of a public life, especially back then. Women's lives were private. They didn't really, you know, talk about their stories. It wasn't a public event. And I found that when I was in Germany looking in the archives for this information, I found the same thing. There are men's stories and what happened to men, but very little about women. And also, by virtue of their gender, men were able to hide or to emigrate. So there were more women left for me to talk to.
Did you come across people who had relatives on both sides, Nazis on one side and people who were sent to concentration camps on the other side?
Yes, and that well, I'd say it's interesting. It's horrifying. I mean, there were oftentimes the people that I interviewed were caught in the middle. They had a Jewish side of their family, as you mentioned, fighting for their lives, trying to leave the country, doing whatever. And then oftentimes maybe a pro-Nazi uncle or aunt, you know, Aryan on the other side. And so, of course, this is very confusing for, you know, a child, a teenager who was in the middle of this.
You note that there was a high rate of suicide among these Michelin women in your book. There's one place where you quote that. Wait a minute. I've got it here somewhere.
I
edit this down. But in the introduction to Ursula Besselman's story, you write that silence kills, and you add that many of the Jewish and Michelin women did not own their own lives, so by taking their lives, they reclaimed power over them.
Right. There wasn't really a high rate of suicide, but in this case, in this story, I was just making a comment that oftentimes they contemplate, either contemplated or went through with it. Often the generation who was Jewish, completely Jewish, to end their life because they thought that, well, it was better the way it was, and they didn't see in the future that it was going to get better. And in that particular story, it was a grandparent who was completely Jewish, and it's actually a very poignant story because she makes a clear decision to take poison and end her life, and she was elderly. But as far as it, in my book, I don't think there weren't a lot of suicides. There was actually one woman who did, but I think for the most part, most of the people endured, and I think that in my stories and Divided Lives, I think I'm showing what we can endure and how we can survive and what we can stand.
We're going to take another short break here on WVXU and the X-Star Radio Network.
Is it really any mystery that listeners love High Brown and the great stories on Radio Mystery Theater? Well, really not. Each year, we hear from hundreds of families, kids, adults, who tell us that they're regular eavesdroppers to this program. What is baffling to us is that there's still space available for underwriting in the show. If your business is interested in reaching a very loyal public radio audience during Radio Mystery Theater or our weekend programming of Garrison Keillor's A Prairie Home Companion, you can call our Mystery Theater Prairie Home Companion Priority Underwriting Hotline and talk to Cassandra. You can call today, area code 513-458-3113. You can call 513-458-3113 today to get your business involved with Mystery Theater or A Prairie Home Companion.
We're back on WVXU and the X-Star Radio Network with Cynthia Crane, who lives in Cincinnati. Her book is Divided Lives, The Untold Stories of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany. I've thought many times that there's kind of a defining moment in American history that lives on, and that would be slavery and the Civil War that ended it. And for Germany, it was the Third Reich. Mm-hmm. Is there still a lot of guilt, shame, whatever you want to call it, among Germans today?
That's a good question. I'd say the younger generation doesn't feel that as much. They're trying to deal with it and, you know, embrace it and talk about it. I think for the generation that went through it, you know, they're older, I'd say 60s, their 60s on up, there's still a lot of defense mechanisms. Some people will downright lie, you know, about where they were and what they were doing. So I think when I was there, I was like a ghost, and I described this. I came back, and all of a sudden, I show up, and I'm another generation. And some people were clearly uncomfortable with having me around. And also, I happened to live in an area where my family used to live. It just happened that that's where I'd stayed with a family. And I went to a picnic one day, and a few people left. They were visibly upset because they had remembered my grandfather, and it was obvious that they had not done what they thought they should have done in the past, and I was a very disturbing presence for them. And, you know, that's how it is, and it's unfortunate, but they will, I'm afraid, have it, that mark on them for quite a long time. And frankly, the people who did escape don't have good feelings about, you know, Germany for obvious reasons.
And yet some of them came back. Some of the women you interviewed came back.
Right. I don't believe that any of them left, which is an interesting, you know, a lot of students always ask me that. Well, why didn't they just leave? Why don't they pack their bags and just take off? I mean, that's their idea. But most of them explained that, you know, it's their language. It's their homeland. You know, they didn't speak another language. This is where they lived, and they didn't want to just pack up and leave. They were hoping that things would get better.
What was some, if you could describe some of the discrimination against Mischling women?
Oh, a lot of them speak about being in school, and it seemed to occur the most in school. Unfortunately, the teachers were Nazified, or they, you know, became Nazis, and they didn't put up with any students who weren't purely Aryan. Ingrid Wecker, who's one woman in my book, described a situation where she was in school, and she was an artist, and the students were asking her to draw on the board a picture of the teacher coming in and putting her hat on and potatoes falling out of the hat because they stuffed the hat with potatoes. And so she was going to go on the board and draw what it was going to look like when the teacher came in and put that on her head. And so she went along with this, and of course she was punished. She went into what we would call the principal's office, and he actually slapped her and asked her if she did this, and she said no, you know, and he said, well, I can tell you're lying of the Jewish people, and, you know, just completely, you know, he punished her, he beat her, and she wasn't allowed to, you know, go out with the students ever again to play, you know, during recess. So they were subject to humiliation and discrimination all the time because they weren't purely Aryan. So they didn't fit into Hitler's idea of what a German really was. So, of course, you know, when people see a chance to have power over someone, unfortunately, that's what they do. And we can learn from this, right? That just because you have the chance to be on top of some, you know, overpower someone, doesn't mean that you, you know, pick up that stick and take that control.
Power corrupts.
That's right, absolutely. And there's also more excerpts on my website that people can look at just to read some of the excerpts from the women. Is dividedlives.com, the title of the book.com.
And there are some excerpts there people can read. And what else? Reviews of the book?
Correct. And media appearances and some links. It's got a lot of information on it.
Tell me what happened when your father joined you in Germany.
Oh, that's a whole interesting section as well. I'm giving away everything right now. I'm just teasing. He was visibly upset at times. I think it was very difficult for him 50 years later to come back. And, at one point he told me that he was actually afraid. When he was leaving to get on the plane, he actually went to the airport 2 hours early, two or three, and that was before 9/11, so it was, you know, there wasn't any reason to be there that early. And his name was called over the loudspeaker. And he got visibly pale. And he said, I wonder what they want with me. And, he, you know, you could see it was an anachronistic moment for us both for different reasons. And I think that it pulled him back in time. He thought that maybe he was going to get stuck there. Of course, it wasn't true, or it was, you know, just his psyche playing tricks on him. Of course, it was just a mix-up with his bag. But this time period and any time period where these things happen, where a group goes through such trauma, it doesn't leave you. I mean, it stays with you. And I found that through interviewing all of these people, that there were some definite similarities. Now, some became even stronger. And I thought what was interesting, and this goes into another topic, was what did the people do about their religion afterward, after the war? I mean, here you have these people who weren't even Jewish, but then after, you know, post-war, some of them became really into the Jewish faith. They didn't convert, but they were reading everything, and a few of them went to Israel, and they were very protective, and they were also stood up constantly against the underdog and also Jewish people. So they sort of, their antennas became very strong. Other people turned their back on God entirely and said, I don't want anything to do with it. It's no God of mine. And then some became adamantly Christian, you know, like born again Christian. So I just thought it was fascinating that here you have an identity thrust on you, then you have to cope for 12 years being persecuted and having an identity that you never even had, you know, never even knew about. And then you come out of it and then you're changing again. So it's very interesting what people go through.
Our guest on Liveline today has been Cincinnati author Cynthia Crane, whose book Divided Lives, The Untold Stories of Jewish Christian Women in Nazi Germany, is now out in paperback. I'm Cynthia Keller, filling in for Ann Thompson. Stay tuned for Law Talk on